White nationalists march in D.C. and Virginia, but their numbers are small, while anti-fascists draw thousands in opposition. Fracking comes to New York in the form of support for the frackers. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI Evening News for Monday, August 13th, 2018. In the news, fewer than two dozen white nationalists appeared in Washington, D.C. on Sunday at a Unite the Right 2 rally marking 1 year since the bloody clash in Charlottesville, Virginia. Led by white nationalist Jason Kessler, who claims he's not a racist, the small group of right-wingers moved under heavy police guard from the Foggy Bottom metro station down a street near the White House. They were dogged by anti-racist counter-protesters along the way, but despite the tension, the heavy police presence ensured there was no violence between the groups. Linda Perry has this report.
Thousands of activists were in D.C. on the weekend to counter the Unite the Right rally on Sunday. They far outnumbered the neo-Nazis. The Reverend Dr. William Barber, president of Repairers of the Breach, spoke at the Rainbow Push Coalition on Saturday.
Trump ain't the problem. He's the symptom of a deeper malady. And it's not just Trump, it's this whole way in which it's been this takeover, this grab. The Southern strategy, Kevin Phillips told Richard Nixon, if we embrace this, we will win for 50 years. This is the 50th year.
Barber says since Trump, 23 states have passed voter suppression laws, all in anti-union, anti-affordable health care, anti-poverty, anti-women, anti-LGBT, and anti-immigration states. Brenda, who marched with Dr. King and with the Freedom Riders, expressed the outrage many felt about white nationalists gathering near the White House on Sunday.
I don't believe that neo-Nazis have the right to march around the White House that was built on the backs of my ancestors, on the backs of slaves, to spread hatred. I often say, I wonder what Bible they're reading. And I'm just appalled at the fact that we have a racist, fascist, misogynistic male men in the White House giving a permit to the same type of people to come and march on the grounds of the White House.
At one point, Antifa burned a Confederate flag on a D.C. street. Lucha is with Refuse Fascism. She asks, what kind of society makes policy to terrorize children?
The message that comes out of D.C. today and goes all over the country has to be that a movement has come onto the scene fighting for a future free of white supremacy.
WPFW, WBAI's sister station, followed the protest through the weekend. In the early evening, journalist Dave Zirin got on the air to say he felt good because the Nazis were gone. He says they crawled back into their hole.
There were about 30 of them. There were, in my estimation, 5,000 plus of us. I mean, there are thousands of anti-Nazi protesters here. And judging from people I've talked to, people have come from really far away. I've met people who driven here from Chicago and people here who came with a church bus from Prince George's County. It's a tremendous variety of people here. It's beautiful. I mean, the rain's just opened up, the lightning and the thunder. I'm getting soaking wet and I've never felt so good.
Zirin says demonstrators are safe and sound.
This was one of those things where I didn't tell my mom what I was doing because I knew that she would be that worried. And a lot in the mainstream media, too, tried to make people scared to come out today, too. There were a lot of articles saying about the expectation of violence, but the best way for us to be safe is for us to be together. That's the best way to be safe. And when there's 30 of them and 5,000 of us, that's a very good way to feel safe.
According to Zirin, there was much love, peace, and joy from counter-demonstrators.
Joy, I gotta say that, because there were certainly aggressive chants, like Nazis go home, and some that were a little even more profane than that. But there were a lot of chants also out here that were just like, say it loud, say it clear, immigrants are welcome here, and that's beautiful. And so there was a lot of that, too.
WPFW's Dave Zirin. Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Brough, embraced supporters Sunday in downtown Charlottesville. At one point, she asked the crowd to raise their fists in solidarity, and she laid flowers at a makeshift memorial. Brough said, "There's still so much healing to do." She said the city and the country have a huge racial problem, and that if it's not fixed, we'll be right back here in no time. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And in more national news, the FBI agent who came under fire by Republicans for sending text messages that disparaged Donald Trump during the presidential campaign was dismissed from the bureau, according to his attorney. Peter Sturzok is the third high-ranking person to be fired from the FBI during the Trump administration, including former FBI Director James Comey. Trump took to Twitter not long after the news broke. Agent Peter Sturzok was just fired from the FBI. Finally, he said, "The list of bad players in the FBI and DOJ get longer and long." Earlier this year, Attorney General Jeff Sessions fired FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe after a scathing report by the Justice Department's internal watchdog. Comey was fired by Trump in May 2017. In energy news, Mexico's president-elect said that he would end fracking earlier this month. Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador said on August 1st, "We will no longer use that method to extract petroleum." Fracking was being considered for the Huasteca Potosina region along the Gulf of Mexico. The area is inhabited by many indigenous groups that fear their way of life would be destroyed by the fracking operation. In his victory speech, Obrador, known to his fans as AMLO, made a historic gesture by mentioning Mexico's indigenous people in his victory speech, something no other candidate had ever done. Climate activists in New York are planning a mass call-in to Governor Andrew Cuomo, telling him to honor pledges not to build more gas-fired power plants in New York State. In 2015, Governor Cuomo banned hydraulic fracking. The controversial drilling technology uses chemicals and explosives and is commonly used in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country. Opponents say that fracking pollutes groundwater with industrial chemicals and contributes to greenhouse gases that are the main culprit behind climate change. Lisa Marshall is an organizer with the group Mothers Out Front. She's based in Horsehead, New York, in Chemung County in the southern tier of the state. Although fracking goes on over the state line in Pennsylvania, Marshall says her community has become a secondary base area used by the fracking industry.
And in Chemung County, in my town, there's a major gas, a fracking truck depot where they bring the sand and other components that they need for the fracking across the border into Pennsylvania. Sometimes we have hundreds of trucks a day going in and out of our town, and we also take frack tailings in our county landfill. And I don't know if it's actually happening, but I know it happens in some counties, and it is legal to spray frack brine on our roads for snow removal. And we also have conventional drilling. There's actually a neighborhood in my town where the residents can't drink their water because it's full of methane bubbles and sediment from a gas well. So even though we don't frack in New York, we still drill vertical gas wells, and they still impact local communities to some extent. We're sort of in the ground zero for New York State gas infrastructure, although there is actually not fracking.
Governor Cuomo's plan to increase the state's reliance on gas led to the construction of massive new gas-fired power plants. With the big projects have come allegations of corruption. A top Cuomo aide, Joseph Prococo, was convicted in March of receiving $250,000 from Competitive Power Ventures related to construction of a 680-megawatt gas-fired power plant in the town of Wauwijanda. The Cricket Valley Power Plant in Dover, with a capacity over 1,000 megawatts, is planned to go online in 2020. The climate activists say that although some aspects of gas are beneficial to the environment, the methane released by fracking gas is up to 100 times more efficient at raising greenhouse gases as carbon dioxide. More efficient at raising temperatures as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. A senior editor for The Forward The Jewish Affairs newspaper published in New York for more than a century was detained and questioned about his political activities on a trip to Israel with his family this weekend. Peter Beinart said he flew into the Jewish state for his niece's bat mitzvah when he was detained at the airport. Asked to step aside for extra screening by a guard, Beinart says he was asked about his involvement with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence and asked if the organization advocated violence. Obviously, he answered no. Eventually, Beinart was questioned about an article he wrote on participating in a protest in the West Bank town of Hebron. He says being stopped was not significant, except that it illustrates how Trump has emboldened Prime Minister Netanyahu to disrespect democracy. Beinart adds in an article he wrote for The Forward about his experience that he traveled to Israel to celebrate what he calls the Jewish future, a future, he adds, we'll have to fight for. And President Trump signed the National Defense Authorization Act for 2019 earlier today, earmarking a record $717 billion for defense spending. United States defense expenditure is by far the world's largest, as big as the next dozen countries combined. The U.S. spends three times more than China, the next largest military, and five times more than Russia spends. The budget for the Afghanistan and Iraq wars are separate expenses, as are numerous other secret Pentagon projects. The John S. McCain National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2019 was named in honor of the longtime Arizona senator and former prisoner of war, who is chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee and currently battling brain cancer. During the signing, President Trump made no mention of McCain, with whom the president has been at odds. Trump said during the campaign that McCain was a loser for being a prisoner of war in Vietnam. In the budget is a plan for nuclear modernization that will eventually cost more than $1 trillion. The bill authorizes more than $200 million to begin the process of producing new plutonium pits, the triggers within atomic weapons. The authorization is intended to ramp up production of new pits to 80 per year. The U.S. already has in storage thousands of decommissioned pits from the Cold War. The Department of Defense is also directed to develop a plan, a darling of President Trump, for a new space force for warfighting outside the Earth's atmosphere. The legislation also accelerates research into artificial intelligence under the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA. Vice President Pence opened the ceremony.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence.
At ease. Members of the Joint Chiefs, leadership of our armed forces, distinguished members of Congress, and all who wear the uniform of the United States, especially the storied 10th Mountain Division. It's a great honor to be here today with all of you, as our president, with the strong support of Congress, will take decisive action to make the strongest military in the history of the world stronger still. All of you have chosen to be part of something larger than yourselves. You've chosen to serve in the armed forces of the United States of America. And let me assure you, you have a champion in the 45th President of the United States of America, President Donald Trump. It's true. This president has no higher priority than the safety and security of the American people. And from the very earliest days of our administration, your Commander-in-Chief has been fulfilling his solemn oath to provide for the common defense. And President Donald Trump always puts our armed forces and your families first. I've seen it firsthand. On our very first day in office, I witnessed President Trump protect our military from a government-wide hiring freeze, and in May of last year, he signed the largest increase in military spending in nearly a decade. And with the leadership and support of this commander-in-chief, our armed forces have taken the fight to the terrorists of ISIS on our terms, on their soil. Their caliphate has crumbled, and soon we will erase ISIS from the face of the earth. And last August, our president laid out our South Asia strategy to give our warfighters in Afghanistan, in his words, the tools they need and the trust they've earned to fight and win. This president has also secured commitments around the world from our allies, commitments from our NATO allies in particular to pay more for our common defense than ever before. And President Trump has articulated a vision to ensure continued American dominance in land, sea, air, and space. And last fall, our president led negotiations with both parties of Congress, and President Trump signed into law the largest increase in our national defense in a generation. Under President Donald Trump, the days of arbitrary budget cuts to our national defense are over. And finally, in June of this year, while our president engaged in historic negotiations with North Korea, he had our missing fallen on his heart. And as the nation witnessed just a few short weeks ago, thanks to the leadership and compassion of this commander-in-chief, our boys are finally coming home. By signing this legislation today, President Trump is keeping his promise to the American people to rebuild our military, restore the arsenal of democracy, and once again give you, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Coast Guard, the resources and training you need to accomplish your mission and come home safe. The armed forces of the United States of America are the world's greatest force for good, and you can be assured President Donald Trump and our entire administration will never stop fighting for you who fight to defend this nation, past, present, and future. So now it is my high honor and distinct privilege to introduce to you your commander-in-chief and a true champion of the men and women of the armed forces of the United States of America, the 45th President of the United States, President Donald Trump.
Thank you, everybody. It's a great place. I've been here before. We love this location. We love this base, and most particularly the people that are working so hard here and so effectively. So I want to start by saying, at ease. Just relax. Do you have seats? You can sit down. Come on. Sit. If you want to stand, you can. We'll just get one big standing ovation, right? Sit down. Thank you. That's pretty good. Everybody's got a seat. Thank you very much. I want to thank our wonderful Vice President, Mike Pence, and say a special hello to the incredible patriots of Fort Drum and the 10th Mountain Division. Special people. Thank you. A few moments ago, I witnessed your extraordinary capabilities firsthand during an artillery raid demonstration, so I'd like to begin by applauding the 10th Mountain Division Combat Aviation Brigade, along with the 3rd Battalion 6th Field Artillery. I hate to say this, but nobody stands a chance against you folks. Nobody stands a chance. I'm here today to sign our new defense bill into law, and to pay tribute to the greatest soldiers in the history of the world, the United States Army. Thank you. Thank you. The National Defense Authorization Act is the most significant investment in our military and our warfighters in modern history, and I am very proud to be a big, big part of it. It was not very hard. You know, I went to Congress. I said, let's do it. We got to do it. We're going to strengthen our military like never, ever before, and that's what we did. I want to say very strongly, there is no better place than right here at Fort Drum to celebrate its passage. No better place. After years of devastating cuts, we're now rebuilding our military like we never have before, ever. Because we know that to survive and having that survival of our freedom, it depends upon the might of our military. And no enemy on earth can match the strength, courage, and skill of the American Army and the American armed forces. Nobody's even close. They never will be. We're grateful to be joined today by many of our nation's top military leaders.
And that's President Trump speaking today. He signed a $717 billion defense appropriation bill for 2019. Bruce Dixon is managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. In his commentary, he says the United States might have two political parties, but they serve one political master, the defense industries.
We all learned in school that some countries have a single governing party. If you're not in that party, you can't be part of the government. The U.S. has two government parties, Republicans and Democrats, both funded by the corporations and the wealthy individuals who make up this country's capitalist elite. If you're not in either one of the government parties, you are denied access to media, and in many states, laws are passed specifically to keep you off the ballot. While the two parties are funded by pretty much the same class of people, their social bases are different. Since the 1960s, Republicans have made it clear that they are the white man's party, the party of war abroad and racist reaction at home. Democrats, for electoral purposes, are obliged to stake a contrary claim. Since the election of Donald Trump, Democrats have branded themselves the resistance. This month, the House and Senate passed the reconciled version of the fiscal year 2019 Pentagon budget on to the White House. On TV and establishment media, they call it a defense budget, branding. The Second World War, which ended in 1945, killed 60 or 65 million people. After the First World War claimed 30 million only a generation earlier. This kind of gave war a bad name. So in 1948, they changed the name of the U.S. Department of War to the U.S. Department of Defense. With the stroke of a pen, wealthy merchants of death, as they had been widely known, war contractors, all became patriotic defense contractors. The U.S. Secretary of War became the U.S. Secretary of Defense, and the U.S. war budget, by far the world's largest, became the defense budget. And so it's been for 7 decades now. Early this month, the House and Senate passed a reconciled version of the U.S. war budget to the president for signature. It's the earliest in the budget cycle Congress has done a military budget since 1997, when a Democrat in the White House and Democrats in Congress were anxious to assure their Republican colleagues that they were all on the same side. They call this year's atrocity the John McCain National Defense Authorization Act, worth a record $716 billion. This total does not include the budget of the Afghan War, which lived somewhere else, or the budgets of several other known programs. And there are secret budgets for more or less secret programs as well. Nobody really doubts that actual U.S. military spending has hovered around $1 trillion a year for several years now.
Bruce Dixon is managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. Friends of Aretha Franklin say the legendary blues and gospel singer's death is imminent. She's been sick for a long time, a friend told People magazine. She didn't want people to know, and she didn't want to make it public. The Queen of Soul began her career as a child singing gospel in Detroit, eventually claiming singing fame with songs such as Respect, Natural Woman, and Spanish Harlem. She eventually made more than 100 singles that made the charts, including 17 number one songs. She sang My Country Tis of Thee at Barack Obama's inauguration in 2009.
Oh, man, I wake up.
And that's some of the news for Monday, August 13th, 2018. The news was produced with Linda Perry, Reggie Johnson at the controls. For WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
God, just take time, and all through my car.